Hey guys, I'm here with Jimmy Corsetti from Bright Insight. He's a YouTuber.
Hi.
I'm sure you all know him.
Hi, Nikki.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. Okay,
it's been a long time coming. We've been talking about doing this for a while.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, me and Jimmy are friends. So that, I guess, should I say that?
Aren't we? We met a year ago. We talked about this. It was around this time last year because you were going to the Tucson
Minerals show.
Yeah. And we were chatting about it like a week or so before you were going, and now it's coming up this next week. So the time has flown by.
Yeah, it has. It's really awesome.
Go ahead. I was going to say, in fact, we were talking about when we first met and we were chatting, I was telling you about, oh, I'm going to do my next video on the Rishat structure Atlantis theory. And then it ended up being like 10, 11 months later before I finally did it, because like I was sitting on some interesting stuff. And then I just kept having this feeling that it wasn't there. I was having like these creativity blocks with it. I'm like, I feel like there's more to say. And like, there's something that's not, it's like I was hitting this resistance. And then fast forward a little bit of time, and then you started sending me some phenomenal info about it. For example, that study for that the Rishat structure is a geothermal anomaly in nature. There's that seafloor slide, as well as a number of different maps. Like I had came across that Roman map by Pomponius Mea, but you sent me like when I had made that other video about various maps showing rivers in the middle of Sahara from 500 years ago. I got those from you. So like to anyone listening, like Nikki, you are a phenomenal researcher and you dig. Like you go looking for things that I've never seen or heard of before. And it made that video on the Rishat structure so much more compelling and so much more fascinating, as there was key details you provided that I was like, how have I never heard of this before?
Well, thanks. I told you, I was like, do you want me to like read Plato and like look into this? Because I could, and you were like, yes, please. And
I'm glad you did.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. It's just also like, I find this sort of thing happens. I'm sure it happens to you where it's like, if I focus on, like, if I'm looking at the wrist shot, all of a sudden, like everything, like things just come to me, like articles come to me. I see things like, or I'll stumble across things, or like I wake up in the middle of the night with like a dream about like that. It's, you know, the antipode of Zealandia, or like whatever it is. It's like, or like I found that like really old book with the
the 1851 Treaties of Mauritania. Yeah, with the showing that they exported salt as well as gold. It is well known, but prior to the discovery of gold in America, that a vast majority of gold provided to Europe came from Mauritania. Got that from Nikki. I was like, what the you know, I was like, holy crap. And, you know, going back to what you were saying, like, yeah, whenever I put my intention towards something, I feel like there's things that come to me. I'm like, it's amazing. All of a sudden I get this thought that seems to come out of nowhere. And it's like this key argument that ends up making one of my videos so much more compelling, whether it's a title of a video or an idea I have for a thumbnail, these little key things that will help things to get traction. It's wild. Yeah, I'm a believer that our brains are antennas into info flying around the universe. Some people think that's crazy and woo-woo, but seeing is believing, and it's happened to me time and time again.
So like I was thinking about this last night. I was thinking about how, like, okay, first of all, food is boring now, because like I feel like I've tasted every flavor. Like, you know, I've had like, you know, every kind of sweet, every kind of savory, every kind of every spicy, every maybe I haven't. Like, that'd be great if I hadn't, right? Or it's like, you know, when I was in high school, it was like listening to some Beatles albums for the first time. I was like, oh my god, this is amazing. Like sometimes I get to this like plat or this like, I don't know what you call it. It's not like a stagnant thing where I'm going like, I need a new conspiracy theory. I need something that I've never heard about that just wants to blow my mind. And so that's where I am today. I'm kind of going like, you know, there's like a limitation of what your belief system can hold. And I feel like I've heard I used to be super obsessed with like all the UFOs and all that stuff. And now I'm kind of going like, okay, right. I'm like kind of bored of UFOs now. Like, it's like, I've seen them. I believe they're there, whatever. Like, I have a whole other theory on like what's really going on with all that. And that's great. But it's like, I don't know. I need a new thing.
I'm with you on that. Like, I'm kind of bored of the UFO stuff, 'cause I don't even know what to believe anymore. I'm like, okay, this could be one of so many things. It's either the U.S. government has just, you know, through secret classified operations, development of new types of next level or next generation technology, or there was, you know, literal, you know, crafts from other worlds that have came in, back engineered, or these are things that have always been here. Maybe it's ancient humans that are now, you know, or it's like aliens that have always been here and they're living under the oceans or underground. There's so many different possibilities. Yeah. That to me, I'm like, the timing of them releasing all this stuff, like April 2020, during the heart of the lockdowns, they're like, oh, the Pentagon has now declassified UFO documents. I'm like rolling my eyes. I'm like, oh, what interesting timing. So to me, I'm like, there's so many people looking into that stuff that I'm like, okay, I'm sure in time we'll learn more. But as of right now, I'm like, there's so many people looking into that stuff that it's like, I should probably be looking into other things that those same types of people aren't looking into, I guess. And then when the truth comes out, we'll undoubtedly hear about it.
I mean, I really think I align more with, well, they're here, whatever they are. But it is also weird in that, like I told you, if you want to see a UFO, come out with me. Like, we'll go, like, five or something. like I'll, if you want me to procure your UFO, Jimmy, I'll procure your UFO. But yeah, like, they really are connected to your consciousness, at least a certain, like, at least the orbs are. And then that's a whole other realm of, like, what are we in here? Like, what exactly is this? So I don't know. Okay, before we go down that rabbit hole, tell me about, like, where are you on catastrophism? Like, because this is your thing, like, you're really looking a lot at the Sahara, so tell me where you're at with
coming across all that water erosion through the Sahara Desert has, like, blew my mind. When people are looking at those massive striations that are hundreds of miles across going north to south, I'm like, this goes beyond some asteroid or comet hitting the ocean and creating some sort of ridiculous wave, although it could be. But to me, I'm like, this, it resonates more with pole shifts to me and the Earth doing things, whether it's continental displacement, whether it's expanding or shrinking Earth. To answer your question, I think all the above is what's happening on Earth. I think that Earth is a very volatile place. And I think that there is evidence of asteroids that have done cataclysmic damage to Earth. I certainly believe in that. But pole shifts are a thing, and very few people talk about them. I mean, more and more people are talking about them, but by and large, like, when it comes to just, like, your average person walking down the street, people they have no idea what that is. I talk to, you know, new people all the time, and people are like, huh, pole shift? Like, what do you mean? Most people, like, that aren't researching this stuff and into these nerdy topics on YouTube, they never heard of this stuff before. They don't teach pole shifts in school. They don't teach expanding and shrinking Earth in school and these other things. They don't talk about sun cycles. I mean, if there's one thing that's probably affecting our weather, not probably, that is affecting our weather more than anything on Earth, I would say it's the sun. And there's hard evidence of this, whether it's the medieval warming period that no one talks about. And when I say no one, I'm talking about the general public. I know there's people listening to this like, well, I talk about this every day. No, I'm talking about, like, the 99 out of 100 people that aren't into these niche topics on a regular basis. Whether it's the mini ice age that went from, like, the 1400s to the late 1700s or 1800s that caused famine around the world and cool temperatures and shorter summers. Like, these things have happened, and they know that they're related to fewer sunspots. So it's undoubtable in my mind that the sun goes in cycles, and that is one of the least talked about things when it comes to catastrophism. There are other people talking about it, thank goodness, and more people are becoming aware of it. But for me, I'm like, between pole shifts, sun cycles, those are the things that are really making me quite curious. But I will say, like, when it comes to asteroids, because that's, like, you know, when you have, like, the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis, that's kind of like this leading theory involving the reset of mankind some 12,000 years ago. And I believe there's strong evidence for it. And I look at other things, like, for example, the Yucatan crater that is allegedly the site that had caused the extinction level event. Yeah. So that thing's like 90 plus miles wide, that the crater itself. And it's believed to have been an asteroid that was like six and a half miles wide. And then I compare it to the comet, the Shoemaker-Levy 9. And I was looking into that not long ago. And that one was allegedly from a fragmented comet that was like a little over a mile wide. And then the main one that hit was like 0.6, over a half mile wide. And that created a fireball out of Jupiter that was larger than the entire planet Earth. So I'm like, well, oh my God, if that comet that hit the Yucatan Peninsula was 6 miles, I'm like, when it comes to kinetic energy, I can wrap my head around that. That could cause insane levels of destruction on Earth. I guess the point that I'm getting at, to come full circle to like your original question, is that I honestly think that it's all the above. I think we get hit by comets and asteroids. I think the pole flips. I think there are super volcanoes. I think the sun goes in cycles. And I think that any of these things can mask one of the event from the other. And maybe some of them are happening on perfect cycles and maybe not. Maybe it's irregular cycles, but they are happening routinely throughout, let's say, many millions of years, billions perhaps. And so I think that this place is just so vulnerable that it's all the above. But when it comes to whatever's happening next, I mean, yeah, we could get hit at any moment by some asteroid they don't see until the last second, if at all. But when it comes to this pole shift and this recent activity inside the Earth, and just something to me, I'm like, in the sun, I'm like, I just have this, that's where my gut's going towards. I'm more afraid of that stuff than an asteroid impact. As stupid as that might sound to some, because it's like, well, if an asteroid hits us that's 6 miles wide, I feel reasonably certain that wherever I am on Earth, I'm going to feel the fallout from it for however long I live afterwards. But I don't know. I think all these topics are amazing. And I feel like in our community of people that are looking into these things, catastrophism, whether it's the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis involving asteroids and comets, whether it's sun cycles, whether it's pole shifts, I feel like everyone has a calling to go down their own unique rabbit hole. And I think it's for good reason, because all these things need to be explored. And no one single person can explore one single topic. There's reasons why there's so many of us. And if we all explore each and any of these topics that we have a calling towards, answers will come from it. Whether there's something that's right or wrong, it's like there will be scientific answers that come out of it all. And that's one reason why I feel a calling towards the Sahara Desert, because I'm like, those water striations are like nowhere else on Earth, although you do see them in Australia, as I put out in my recent video. But I'm like, is that caused from, you know, an asteroid that hit the ocean? Could it have caused those types of striations? Or is that more of like...
So weird, though, that it doesn't really seem to have affected Europe. You know, it's
right.
Just...
Unless the water came, unless that's where it came from, unless the ice shelf up there had bursted those, you know, the Caspian Sea or the Black Sea. I don't know. Like, but it seems that it came from up in that direction. And then maybe there was volcanic activity that masked it. I don't know.
It almost looks like, it literally almost looks like someone took Africa and went, pushed in the water and like, and then it rebounded up, you know? I don't know.
It's kind of funny you say that, because I'm like, I've seen different comments with people talking about the Rishat structure. And it kind of does look like it. The people are like, it kind of looks like a whirlpool. It looks like it was like a drain. And I look at it, I'm like, because that sounds almost ridiculous. Like, oh, come on, you know. And then I look at the thing and suddenly the imagery, I'm like, it kind of has that look to it. And especially when you consider the striations that blast literally right over it. I'm like, was this like...
And we have to consider that the Earth has more water underneath the oceans than there are above the oceans. And so like there is myth and legend that like the waters came up and the rains came down, and like there was
right in the Bible.
Yeah. So
people
it
rained 40 days and 40 nights, but it said, no, all the springs, I don't know if it said all, but it said the springs of the earth opened and the water came from underneath, something to that, paraphrasing.
Even if it rained, and it didn't cover the whole world.
Right. So I'm like, you know, like the mantle literally has, like you said, like more water exists in the mantle than it does in all the Earth's oceans combined. And I'm like, so if the Earth was to shrink or expand, like shrink, that caused that water to come up.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, ugh. And then I look at like between South America and Africa, that's so apparent that they were connected. I'm like, maybe the Earth has shrank and expanded far more recently. And maybe that's as a result of pole shifts or not. I don't know. But I look at these things and because a lot of people say, you know, where's the evidence of lost advanced civilization? I'm like, well, first of all, I feel like I've talked about this so much and other people are talking about it. What's like, you know, the evidence is the stonework. There are things that exceed the known capabilities of the ancients. But that aside, I'm like, I look at sites like Machu Picchu, and Ollantaytambo in Peru. And I'm like, when I was there, I almost had this feeling that maybe those sites weren't built at the top of mountains, that they were essentially lifted up. And that maybe that the reason why so much has been removed and erased from our lost past is because maybe the cataclysm was far worse than what people imagine. Maybe it goes far beyond a comet. And by the way, maybe a comet does hit us and then it causes the earth to flip over. Maybe it's all the above. Like, I don't know. But I'm like, maybe we have to open our minds that catastrophism is quite literally so much worse than our brains can comprehend. And I think the Sahara Desert is one tiny little example of this, because if you really look at that vast area where that water erosion goes through, I'm like, this is more than just a wave. This is not just like a little tsunami, or never mind, a little tsunami. This is more than just a big tsunami. This is like, to me, it looks like the ocean was like literally flushing over it for a period of time. So when you said maybe it went up and down, I'm like, yeah, like maybe it went down and then you have this surge. Like if you go like into the beach, just, you know, an inch, you know, the tide coming and going, and you know, it pulls the sand out from underneath your toes. So imagine that on a level with, like, you know, if the water is like a mile or two deep, you know, it would be stripping bedrock at a level that, you know, is unfathomable.
The thing about the Sahara is that is weird. It's like, you know, like I found petrified wood and stuff there, and it's, I think that, like even those maps, like they were all looked like they were lush, and it looks like there's an Amazon. And when you put Pangea together, like where the maps would go is exactly where it would have connected up with the Amazon, as if that would have been like one continuous, like horizontal, long flowing river, that went into the Sahara.
So,
like I did that the other day, 'cause I was thinking about it. I was like, I wonder how closely that would match in a puzzle thing. But anyway, I think to myself, I'm like, you know, and we've talked about this before, but I mean, it could have been greener, like a lot sooner than they've been telling us. 'Cause it seems like that via a lot of those things.
The vibe I'm getting, you want to hear one little random thought that came to mind when you were making the comparison of the Amazon to like stuff going on in the Sahara, is that we've seen different reports of like mummies being found that had nicotine and cocaine in their systems. And people are like, oh, this is evidence that we had traveled of transoceanic travel between the ancient Egyptians and South American. And I'm like, what if the answer is that those continents were connected, as we know they were, and that the plants that there was once before the Sahara dried up had nicotine as well as the cocoa plant. And, you know, up until X amount of years ago, far more recently than what we were taught or, you know, supposed to have been possible, that those plants were growing naturally there, just like they grow in South America, in Central America, I should say.
That wouldn't be that surprising to me if that was the case. I mean, I could buy that, actually. I just think that it's okay. Here we are today in 2023. And I just feel like anything like before 500 years ago is super foggy. You know, we have the Dark Ages, and then you had like, you know, Roman, and then it was like Dark Ages sort of before that. And then you had Greek, and then there's all these periods of where it's like high civilization, and then like you're eating dirt, and then high civilization, and then you're eating dirt. It's very bizarre, and the explanations are just, I don't know
my conclusion from that, because the explanations don't make a whole lot of sense. And I feel like one thing that there needs to be more of an emphasis of is humans, and for some reason we lean towards destruction and war, power and control. And I feel like throughout history, we are constantly fighting against tyrants, and it's the tyrants that keep us into the so-called Dark Ages, that they stifle innovation. This is one reason why, like, when it comes to the United States, America, how we essentially led the world into a technological age. And how was that done? Simply through freedom and security. And I'm not going to get into all the stuff involving how we obliterated an entire continent worth of people, because that's a very sensitive topic on what happened to the Native Americans here. And I don't want to turn the conversation into that direction, but more so just to just make the point, because how we got this is stolen land. And so I'm very sensitive to that. But my point is that if you just give enough people security and full bellies of food and freedom, we will look what we've done in the last 150, 170 years. We went from horse and buggy to a steam engine to everything since, to these cell phones that were and Wi-Fi and everything else. And so I feel like when you're saying like there's these points of going heights and stuff like this of humans, I feel like what it might come down to is either it's climate and or a bunch of just assholes, tyrants, people that are just stopping people from being innovative, and they constantly just wreck everything and destroy it. And this is a point that I've been trying to make like going back to the Egyptians, which is that they've had these three different kingdoms that are known about, and these periods of like lost history in between them, where it said that there was, you know, the overthrew of the dynasties, and that there was a revolt and revolutions or whatever, and hundreds of years of lost history in between. And I'm like, I know what the answer is to that. It was literally people killed each other, and they threw out and killed the people who were running the show, and new people came and started running it, and they changed a bunch of stuff in the process. And then in the process, hundreds of years, literally hundreds of years go by, and then now everyone's dead that was around beforehand. And then like there's literally this lost understanding of the way the times were before, whether good or bad. And it's, I just feel like it's a rinse, cycle, repeat, because you will not find one single corner of this planet that has had human civilization that isn't marked by war and revolt and tyranny. Every single corner.
And what do you think about the systematic destroying of stuff? Like you went to Iraq, you saw how they, like, what is the name of that place you went where they destroyed now? And you took pictures like with the winged bulls. What was the name of that little?
So that's in the modern city of Mosul, and it's the ancient biblical city of Nineveh. And that's allegedly where Jacob had went after he escaped the whale. Was it Jacob or Jonah? Excuse me, Jonah had escaped after he had escaped the whale's belly. And then he went to the gates of Nergal. And that's in the modern city of Nineveh. And that was one of the most wild things I've ever seen. And I was there by just, timing, good fortune. I was one of so few to go see it. I'm not the only one to have seen it, but one of very few. And it's like, and then here we are, thousands of years later, people busting these Assyrian bulls, allegedly Assyrian. They might be older, but that's a whole other topic. But, and it's like, yeah. A bunch of people go out there and just smash them to bits like they never existed in the first place. And now you only have a number of them remaining in the whole world in museums from Chicago, New York, London. In France at the Louvre. And I think there's one or two in the London Museum, I believe. I have to double check on that. Actually, no, there is. But anyway, yeah. So it's like this is what people do. People like it needs to be they need to update the encyclopedias about the human species. And start like really teaching kids this at an early age.
That makes me wonder though, because okay, like, are we really just brutes? Which we might be. But that's what I almost feel like that's what we're led to believe, that we're just brutes, really. But at the same time, it's very much like, you know, it's peons fighting like rich man's games. You know, it's there's right. always this controlling factor. And for me, like whoever this controlling factor is or isn't, even if like maybe there is a symmetry or like a line of continuation between things that we don't really know about with this controlling factor, but they're the ones that seem to want to do like the iconoclast, or, you know, which is like in the intentional destruction of history. Like I think there is sort of power in us keeping us ignorant about what we're capable of as humans. And I just don't, sometimes I feel like that's bigger than testosterone.
It could be. Well, hey, I'm with you. I think that there is we are literally, so I'm not like some Bible thumper. I was raised Catholic and I dumped that early on for many reasons. But I am a believer. I am a spirit. I call myself spiritual. I'm a believer in something. And I believe that there is a difference between good versus evil. And this is a very debatable topic. Some people say, well, there is no evil. I'm like, as human beings, there is a difference. There are things you can do that are very bad. And it is known, like hurting kids and other things, like that's evil. So I'm like, I believe that we're living in a time of good versus evil. And to tie that back into what I was talking about, like not being a Bible thumper, I'm like, it actually talks about this, that it said it's happened before and it will happen again, where there's this spiritual battle of good versus evil. And it seems to make sense. And some people who out there who are non-believers hear this and they just roll their eyes at it. And I'm like, well, then don't believe in it. But just understand that if nothing else, it seems that things do happen in cycles of times of good and times of bad. And if it happened before, it'll happen again. It's like they're almost making it sound like, you know, history repeating itself. It's like this cliche thing. I'm like, there's a reason why things keep happening over and over and over again. And this ties into my point I was making a moment ago, which is like they need to update the encyclopedias involving the human species to list like power hungry, bitter, jealous, envy. Like that's one thing going back to the Bible, not to keep bringing it up, but I'm like, one part that's, as I've been looking into it more, I can't believe how much, like how many different stories there are about people. They're discussing about people getting jealous of each other, stabbing, you know, essentially killing their own siblings because they have something that they don't. And I'm like, you could have some tyrannical dictator who for no other reason that he's just jealous that somebody else smarter than him, it created something special for the masses. The masses respect that person more than them, and they go like this to him because it's like they don't want that person having more love and affection than they're getting because they're not good enough. And it's the same thing we saw with the gross reaction to Ancient Apocalypse Show and Graham Hancock and others. And you have all these people coming out of the woodwork to try to destroy everything about it. And I'm like, it kind of just, the vibe I get from it is like, there's a lot of people who are a little bit jealous because it's like, hey, you don't have to agree with the whole show. If you don't have questions about it, like Bimini Road and, you know, Hidden Chambers, you know, and Gunung Padang. I never say that right. Gunung Padang. Yeah, I never say it right. 25,000, dated 25,000 years ago. If you don't have questions about this stuff, then it's like, maybe you're in the wrong field because it's like, if nothing else, you don't have to agree with everything that anyone else says, nor should you. But if not, you know, you shouldn't be, if you don't like what someone is presenting, then present what you feel is the correct answer and present it better. And life goes on. And this is, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that whole thing is interesting how they do that. But I mean, back to your point with the good evil thing, I also kind of feel like another way to frame it or another way I think about it too is if people aren't really into like that aspect of it, it is kind of it's like there's this push to be like a hive mind where we all dress like, think like, do like, we do all these things at this age. We did it, you know, like there's this like cookie cutter, like this is what we are. This is what we do. Like this whole almost like becoming a machine versus like being sovereign and being free and being able to do your own thing when you want to do it, how you want to do it, whatever. So I feel like those are like kind of two overarching battles. It's kind of like do as I say you do, or like let me do as I want to do, you know. So it's kind of that underlining sovereignty versus hive mind is well, very know, big theme.
I totally agree. And if there was ever a time for everyone to see this hive mind was through the events of the last few years involving lockdowns and all this stuff. And I'm like, it became, looking back now, you can see that it's very apparent on who did research and who did nothing more than look at headlines and believe what they were told. And I put that into the hive mindset, whether their intentions were good or not. And I feel like, so a lot of people like who don't know like my past, like when I was starting my YouTube channel, I was living in Boise, Idaho. I was married when I had just started it and we split shortly thereafter. My channel was very small at that time. And then for the next 4 years after that, I lived alone with my two dogs. And what I started finding, and let me just back up, just months before that, I was in a MBA program in school. I got my graduate degree in Master's of Business Administration. And so like, I was very caught up. I was very like trying to like everyone else, like in that hive mindset. I mean, I've always thought for myself probably more than most just because it's kind of like my personality. I disagree with people on the reg, but I was also caught up too. And so I feel like I know what it's like to be in that hive mindset. And then what undid that for me was to have lived alone for like 4 years, very few friends and no family out there. And when you are alone, all of a sudden something special happens where you start to think for yourself and you start to see just how impressionable we are and how you don't want to speak out against these things. Like if I hadn't been alone, I don't know if I'd have this. I wouldn't have this YouTube channel. I'd be too afraid to talk about Atlantis in front of other people that I was like, say, going to school with others. Cause like, oh, they're gonna think I'm an idiot. And that's one reason why I was like DL with my identity when I was creating my channel. Like it was just Bright Insight, Jimmy. No one knew who I was. I never shared my last name. And it's because I care what other people think, but something very special happens. The more that you're alone, you start to care less and less what other people think. Although I would say to anyone, I think there's something very special about living alone and being alone to get to understand who you truly are. And then there's a certain line there where it's like, you're alone too much and everyone needs people in their life. Like human beings are a social creature and we need to be around others. And so, yeah, when going back to your talking about the hive mindset, I'm like, this is most people.
Well, you know, and I feel like a lot of it is coming even more with like AI and just like the amount we spend on our electronics and how dependent, like, I mean, think about when we were kids, like we were like just versus now, like how much dependence there is on technology that we just did not have. It's super weird. So I feel like it's going to be ever more difficult to get away from. But yeah, like I don't say my last name because one, a lot of dudes are creepy on here, but two, the other thing is that I have a corporate, I mean, I'm a flight attendant, right? So I mean,
that's right.
I could just fly with somebody who would be like, oh my god, like this girl's crazy, she's talking about like seeing a unicorn, like fire her. I mean, I don't know what they would, I mean, like I thought COVID was bullshit. I've said that like 80 million times on like so many videos. I mean,
believe in the flu, you don't believe in the seasonal flu.
Well, come on now, Jimmy, that's gonna get this tagged. But that's the thing, is like the fact that we even are so censored in what we can even say, you know, there's only so much we can even say on YouTube. Like what kind of shit is that? It's crazy.
Well, here's the fun thing. Because for human beings, here's another characteristic of being a human being, is our ability to pick up patterns. And I'm sorry that I'm starting to notice a pattern on things that we are not allowed to say that ends up being true later on. In fact, it's a remarkable pattern. It's almost like every single thing that has been off limits to be spoken about over the last few years turns out to be validated. So don't, you know, I was saying recently, not long, you know, I was talking to other people saying that like, I have a right to ask questions. We all have a right to ask questions. And, you know, to be able to have an open conversation, I feel like, so you and I are very close to the same age. And so we remember what it was like to have these stupid expensive phones and all this other technology. And I remember that it wasn't that long ago that everyone had a right to say whatever they wanted within reason. I mean, if you're calling for violence, that's one thing. But like, if just to have an idea and to question things and to have like provocative ideas that might sound silly and fringe and pseudo to some, you're still allowed to say it. In worst case scenario, people just roll their eyes, laugh at you, maybe a little bit of ridicule, which doesn't feel good, but it's kind of like the worst case scenario. Now we live in an age where it's like people like, you say something you don't agree with. It's like they want to cancel you, but it's almost like they want you dead because throughout history, that's just what they do. Exist. Like they just torture you to death and kill you.
Yeah. Say and that, here's they'll be like, you shouldn't have a voice. You shouldn't be heard at all. Like if I disagree, right. It's like that extreme, you know, right. I've been like, I think people, I mean, I always have to give a lot of my, okay. I have a cousin who would never watch this, so it doesn't matter if I talk shit about her. But anyway, she was telling me, she was talking about that there's a difference between having a bias in news versus misinformation. And I was like, oh, is that right? And like, I was just like kind of listening to her perspective on how, you know, she thinks like CNN is the most wonderful thing in the universe or something. And they're in the vernacular, or not the vernacular, that's in the mindset of the people who are really calling for cancel culture or for silencing of these misinformation or these dissentient views, or however you say that word. It's this whole thing. Well, it's dangerous. Like what they're saying is dangerous and it's misinformation. And I'm just going like, wow, these are all propaganda terms that have been like coming about in the last 3 years. And they're just like, now they're just like stuck in their head like glue. And I've had to like, it doesn't matter if you wanted to say the most egregious thing, like there's a Christopher Hitchens video that I've shared on Twitter a bunch and that I do share it with my friends, but it's just like, if somebody like goes in and says like, God, the Holocaust never happened, or whatever, and it's that even their opinion needs to be shared and expressed, because the discourse, like we need to be able to be like, okay, well actually it did and here's why it did, like how you grow, like if you like squash people's ideas or whatever, you're just going to make it fester. It's like you're just picking at a wound. But if you really want something to work itself out, you're going to have to like discuss all options and all angles of something and like get to, I mean, it's even like that within their science community, you know, like you're talking about like the Graham Hancock thing. It's like, they don't even give a crap like what he's stating. It's just like, he's a racist. Cause he's saying that somebody beside the native person in the country that he's looking at that ruin might've built that. It's like, actually, right. He isn't even saying that. He actually isn't even saying that. He's just saying that even if those native people built this, which he's not even saying they didn't, he's just saying they had advanced technology, or they had, you know, like they're, or they were more advanced than we thought what they were. Like that's what he's saying. And now it's just like, nope. Sorry. He needs to be completely taken off of everything. We need to sign like a million petitions, and he needs his voice. He's a dissenter. He's a dissented view. Like that's really, scary for society if we get down and we continue to let that happen. It's going to be really bad.
This is, and the proof is in the pudding. It's like, you know, this has already been done multiple times across multiple continents, whether it's the Stalinists in Russia that killed like 20 million of their own. And like, you know, what they did was they just purge all the people that disagreed with them, if they even had a whiff of it, get rid of them all. Same thing in China with the Maoists. Like when they were purging their own dissidents and starved them out back in the 50s and 60s, at least like 35 million dead and maybe more than 70 million. They don't even know the number. So many tens of millions of people. And that's exactly what they do. They cut off anyone with a dissenting opinion and they go like this to them throughout history. Like this has happened time and time again. And like your cousin, who I'm sure is a very lovely person and wants what's good for all of mankind, unfortunately, is, I don't want to say she's historically illiterate, but it's to no fault of people's own, is that we're not taught this in school. We're taught that like, oh yeah, the Nazis were bad. You know, that's not good. But it's like, they don't get walked through how this developed. Like that literally it's about like some power hungry people running the show and people trying to speak up against it and they get silenced. So this is why, you know, I'm such an advocate for freedom of speech, is that throughout history, it's been proven time and time again that it always ends in a complete disaster. And it doesn't have to be this way. Let the discourse, like as you said, let that happen. But if you're guilty of something and you're in the wrong, you're not going to allow that. So
yeah, but that's the thing. Like if you're so egregious in your opinion and it's super like just doesn't match up to reality, like the public discourse would be like, yo, then here's why that doesn't work. And then eventually you'd go like, oh, okay. You know, I mean, that's just how like it would work if you just how it has worked when we've had free speech in the past. And part of me wonders, have we not had free speech for a long time and we just didn't know it? And like 2020 is what really put a really big highlight on that for us. I don't even know. That's where I definitely woke up to it. Like,
yeah, a lot of people did. Not enough, but a lot.
Yeah, definitely not enough.
And this is the thing. There'll be people listening to this that are like disagreeing with half the stuff we're saying, but like they should know. And this is, it's almost not even worth saying anymore because no one cares. But I just want to be like, you know, you understand that what I'm saying here applies to you as well. My biggest critics or anyone else, it's like, I support your right to say whatever you want. As long as we all get a right to say whatever we want, everything, the merry-go-round of life will go around just fine as it always had. Like, this is the difference. Like, this younger demographic is being raised to think that like, you're right, this is misinformation. This is going to screw over a bunch of people. We better do something. We have to do something about it. This will be disastrous. But they're not aware that this has already been played. This has been done throughout history and it's bad. And so they just don't know. Like a lot of these people have good hearts, actually. It's not that there's some sinister bad person that wants to shut you up. It's because they're thinking like, this is for the greater good. But when you have that community hive mindset, that is what leads to complete total tyranny, because it puts the group above the individual. And that's what this fascism, this is what communism is. This is what this whole, that's what it's about, is that when you put them above the individual, then you're kind of just reducing the value of one human life. Cause it's like, hey, listen, come on, Nikki, if we could just save one person's life, or no, we're going to save two people's lives, so we should kill this one person, right? It's for the greater good, right? But then you're just totally being like, so this one person doesn't count though? This person that has, you know, a mom and a dad and kids and everything. It's like, yeah, you're right. You're reducing the value of human life when you put the group above the individual. And this is what has led to atrocities. 100 million people in the last, you know, in the 20th century, at least. And it's been through that same type of mindset.
Yeah. And I don't really know. I mean, I think the way you can kind of combat it is to just, you know, be your own authentic self and go about your, I mean, I don't know how you combat that. Like, I really don't. It's
good. Well, I will say on a more positive way of looking at it is that there's something very, very liberating about going your own way and sharing your thoughts with the world. And even though you know that you'll get pushback and hate for it or just ridicule, there's something liberating about saying your truth. You know, not everyone can possibly be right about everything, but as long as you have your integrity and you're sharing what you believe to be true, there's something very, very special about it. Because then something over time, and it's not easy, and it's something that anyone with a conscience would struggle with, but like getting more thicker skin and more tolerant to push back and ridicule and other things, that over time you'll care less about what people think. And that's important. Very special about it. It's like, not everyone's gonna like me. Oh well. Like
I'm
it's
starting
hard
to get,
for people to get to that.
I think I just got to the point maybe like yesterday or today where I'm kind of going like, maybe I shouldn't read comments. Like I think I might be there at that point.
Then
I'm
you have
kind of
all
going
the
like
power. That you have all the power, because if you go looking at negative comments, you're always gonna, there's always gonna be something that's negative. And it sucks when you see people write something about you that you know isn't true or doesn't fairly represent you. And you want to say something back. You want
like,
to correct
why are you
them. You
taking
want to be like,
time to shit on me? Just literally, there's a billion videos on YouTube. Just literally, like a billion. Just click the next button if I'm not for you. That's cool. Like, that's all you have to do. But to express to me why you don't like me in however many words is just like sad. And I know I should, it's the reflection of them, not a reflection of me. But I am finally going like, I think I might could just wash my hands of all comments, just not looking at them anymore. I don't know. There's enough that I'm like, geez, Louise.
That gives you all the power. It's something I've embraced. I mean, I'll still take a gander because I want to know what people think to some extent, but like I know when to stop looking and where to not look. But you know, there's a famous quote, and it's always, it's usually wrongfully attributed to Aristotle, but it was actually an English poet like 100 years ago. I can never remember his name, but what he had said was, "The only way to avoid criticism is to do nothing, say nothing, and be nothing." This comes with the territory. If you want to share things, if you want to be someone, if you want to share things, if you want to do something, it is absolutely going to come with criticism. And honestly, the more successful you are, the more of a voice that you have, you will now have more criticism. But that, you got to embrace it and realize that, like, would you rather be sitting on the couch, not talking to anyone interesting, not putting anything out there, not sharing your ideas, so you can safely not get criticism? Or is it worth it? It's like, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to get some hate, but the thrill of sharing new things with other people that haven't heard before is far worth it. It far outweighs the criticism. And honestly, the one thing that fuels me is that all the people that I respect and admire the most, and this is in so many different categories, it could be athletes, it could be people of all different realms. And we're not just talking about ancient history enthusiasts or something like that. I'm talking about anyone that's gone on to be successful, whether it's business owners, other thing. They all say the same thing. And it's like, you know, or they don't all say the same thing. I should say that I've noticed it with all of them. Go look up the most, in your mind, the most successful musicians of all time, your favorite song ever, and then go watch it on YouTube and scan through the comments.
Yeah.
I've been like mortified. I'm like, oh my God. Like you'll see people just hate on it. And I'm like, and then you start to realize it's like, this is just how it is. This is how it works.
I think a lot of
this
that is
part
the
of the game.
Anonymity, though. Like the anonymity aspect of a lot of online aspects allow, because people wouldn't say that to your face. Like no one's ever come up to me and been like, hey, you're really asymmetrical to my face. Like I've never had, I mean, I've gotten that comment on a YouTube channel. It's like, oh, thanks for the unsolicited advice, asshole. But no, like it, but in real life, people don't go like, hey, you know, like, very bizarre to me that people with the cloak of not knowing who you really are, not putting your face, your name in anything, you will just spew like some of the craziest stuff on people. It's very weird. But so speaking of all this stuff, like how is it, what's it like going on Rogan, man? That must have been nerve-wracking.
It's quite a thrill. That is something that it will always be dear to me, because I remember back in 2015, I was in the middle of that MBA program and I was real depressed. I've shared this with other people on other platforms before, but like I was going through this period of like unhappy with my direction. I thought I wanted to be Mr. Corporate America, and I was unhappily married. I hate to say that, but like, you know, you're a lovely woman, but like, but things weren't going well in my life. And I was at this point, I'm like, I need to change something career-wise, just everything. And I started going down this rabbit hole of lost ancient technology and the Egyptians. And I came across an awesome video of Brian Forster showing the Serapeum in Egypt with these 70 and 100 ton stone boxes with their lids. And I was like, I've never seen or heard of these before. And then they come across Graham Hancock and Randall Carlson with Joe Rogan. And then from there, I'm going down this rabbit hole. So there I am on the couch. And then like to think that a handful of years later, I'd be across the table talking to Rogan. Cause that's what I remember thinking about, is like, How cool is this Joe Rogan guy? I really respect him for a lot of reasons because I've learned he's had so many interesting people on his program that has enhanced my life, whether it's things about diets and exercise, psychedelic experiences, just all kinds of different life wisdom that I attained from listening to how he's used his platform to give all kinds of other people a voice. So to like having been on it myself was truly surreal. And I gotta say, like, he is such a generous individual. Like, I don't know him real personally. Like, it's kind of like real business. Like, he brings you on, he shows up at the studio, you film and you get out of there and you're on your flight home. So it's like, I haven't like, you know, like hung out with the man. But what I know about him is that I deeply respect him. He's incredibly generous. And yeah, he takes care of you. He flies you out there in class and, you know, puts you in a nice hotel. And his team is wonderful. They're all very sharp individuals. They know what they're doing, the best at what they do. And, but yeah, so like the first time I was on, I was real scared. The second time around, Ben from Uncharted X went with me, and it kind of helped me feel a little bit more at ease because I'm like, oh, I know he's nervous. So it kind of makes me feel, and one, I knew what to
I've
expect
done
because I
this.
had done it before. So that helps. But the truth is that when I was in that lobby of the hotel waiting for the car to come pick us up to bring us to the studio, in fact, I'll tell you, like the first time I was on his show, when he had said, you know, 3, 2, 1, we're live. I had a little adrenaline dump sitting there, and I was trying to hide it because I know that I've done enough public speaking, and I've had other people that have trained me before say, like, hey, you will never look as nervous as you feel. So even if you can hear and feel your heart beating out of your chest, they won't know it unless you are fidgety or if you quiver in your voice. So if you kind of regulate your breathing and make a point not to squirm too much and like play around with something, they won't know it, and then it will pass. Like within a few moments or minutes, it will pass. And so there was this moment when I was on with the first time, he had told me to bring up the microphone. The reality is that I was starting to shake, quiver kind of like in my voice. But because I was far enough away, it just sounded like the microphone wasn't working. And so when he told you to bring it up or told me to bring it up, I remember thinking to myself all the times I've heard him say to people, like, bring that sucker up to you. And I said, I'm like, oh yeah, bring that sucker up to me. And I remember looking at the camera and I kind of took a deep breath. And then the moment passed. I felt good all of a sudden because it was like it took the edge off. I'm like, oh, this is hilarious. I'm here. This is great. And so the same thing though was happening the second time is that like Ben, I thought was less nervous than I was. I was still nervous in those first few moments, but in a fun way. It's like it's so thrilling to know that it's a
No,
platform
see,
that so many people.
I would be scared, or I would be nervous when he's like, "How so?" Or you know, like, "Jamie, look that up. Jamie, what's this? Like, look, yeah, like I like that. I love Joe Rogan for that, but he's like, no bullshit. He's just like, okay, like,
No.
you know." And I'm
Yeah.
the
And
kind
he'll
of person,
stare at you. Here's another thing that the camera doesn't pick up on when you're there. So, you know, anyone that's watched the Joe Rogan program could see they pan from one side to the other. But what they can't possibly show you is what it's like to sit in the hot seat where he's directly in front of you, staring back at you, like looking into your soul, like just like I'll be talking about something. He'll be like, I don't know if that even looks and makes sense, but he's just staring, he's just looking at you, and I don't know what he's thinking. And so it's quite a interesting thing.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. Well, do you have any questions about it? Like, I don't even know what else to share.
I
Like,
don't know.
it's
I
such
mean,
a fun
yeah, no,
experience.
I mean, that's I mean, I guess like most people will never get that opportunity, like percentage wise of humans. So yeah, that's kind of interesting that you've gotten it twice, and that's what it's like to be in, like, I mean, he technically has more listens or subscribers or something than mainstream media, you know? So
All
that's.
of them. He has more average listeners than Fox, CNBC, NBC, and CNN combined, like daily, far more than that combined. And so it's a really cool thing. It's a testament that people are exploring and seeking alternative ideas and truth elsewhere, that a lot of people are waking up to see that the quote unquote mainstream media isn't necessarily sharing everything they need to hear. And not to mention, there's something special about a long form format. Essentially, that like you can watch some interview on one of these other mainstream outlets, and like it's all edited, and like there's commercial breaks. It's rare to see somebody. In fact, Rogan's podcast was very, very big prior, but when he first had Elon Musk on, I believe back in 2018, this like broke the internet. It had like the most listeners and got like 20 million views.
Oh, really? Is that
like
his like viral thing? I don't know. I remember.
Well, he had done other viral things before that, but in my mind, when he had him on, he was at a high level then, but it almost like took it up a notch where it's like, whoa. And because that was the first time, because Elon Musk is this fascinating feature. A lot of people were curious about him. And all of a sudden, you finally had him in this like 3+ hour format drinking whiskey. And you get to just listen to him and hear him talk. And I'm like, a lot of people gravitate towards that. I was like, I just want to hear someone speak. I want to figure them out a little bit. Like, you know, other people that anyone finds fascinating, it's one thing to like go on to some interview that's going to have like a 15-minute, 20-minute segment broken up with editing and commercial interruptions. And you don't know who the hell these people are. But when you have 3+ hours of just like long format conversation, uninterrupted, then you get a read on somebody. You get a feel for who they are more so. And there's something
and the subject
fun and special
matter.
About that.
I mean, because like I'm a big Rogan fan and I've always, and like, you know, I don't care about the wrestlers or the comedian. I mean, like whatever, but like, I mean, there's a like, so I, you can, that's the beauty of Rogan. You can pick and choose like the guy, the kind of guest you want to listen to or whatever. But right, I mean, right. I think like just like 3 hours of Graham Hancock on there wasn't even enough for me. I was like, wait, what? It's over?
Right.
What? That's it?
Right.
And you don't even like it. So it wasn't, you're going like, yeah, that's bigger than any movie you've ever gone to, like longer than any movie. But yeah, you don't even notice the time.
Yeah.
By, you know, and you can get a really big deep dive into a particular subject, which I think is,
yeah,
is, yeah, like that's really, really.
Yeah. So that's, it was a special thing. It's something I'll always be extremely grateful for. And I hope to see more other people on it that are into our field and get the opportunity to go up there and speak. It's a fun thing. It's something that I'll always have because it's almost like, you know, it sounds cheesy to some, but it's kind of like a law of attraction thing to me. It's something that I had hoped would happen. I thought it'd be so much fun to go have a conversation with someone like him because he's so interesting and it's rare to connect with people that are into these niche topics. And so to have it happen is something that I'm just very grateful for and it was fun and I hope to do it again. And there's just so much more to chat about. Another thing is too, is like going back and rewatching it. It's like, you realize I felt like the first time went okay. The second time went much better. And then, but watching it, I'm like, oh, Jimmy, why didn't you say this? Or why didn't you say that? Let me give you one little example. When I was talking about the Emekusi volcano in Chad in the Sahara Desert, and Jamie had brought up a picture showing clouds over Emekusi, but people don't realize, like, I'm sitting far away from the TV screen, and when you're watching it online, you could see, like, the shadows that those are clouds. Well, I was referring to other pictures in that moment when I was speaking. I was referring to photos that I had included in my video showing the salt in the caldera of Emekusi. Anyone that saw it knows that that is absolutely salt. But in that exact photo that's shown on the screen in that moment that I'm talking, it actually is a photo that's showing mostly clouds over it. And I'm like, and I'm watching this back to myself. I'm like, oh, no. Those are clouds. That's not what I'm talking about. And like, you know, it's like in all these other little things. Like,
nobody knows
this,
that.
Jimmy? Why didn't you say that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just little things. And it's like, it's all in fun. Cause it's like, you always, when you're in the hot seat and you know, people are watching you and listening to you, you know, it's like there's so many things that you wish you could have said. So it's like, I'm my own worst critic. There's so many things, little things that I can nitpick. But I would just, you know, it's a lot of fun. And I was very grateful for the opportunity. And I was most excited too for Ben. I'm like, Ben has so many fascinating things to share. I believe that he is providing the best arguments showing evidence of lost ancient technology with the precision of stonework. And it was awesome to see him on there and share these details that most people haven't seen or heard of before. And the only part is like, I'm like, dude, this guy needs 3 hours on there alone because he barely cracked the surface. There was a bunch of other things that I was hoping he was going to be able to get into and share. And it's just not enough time. But I was glad that we each got a chance to really get onto and kind of say our piece. Like I got a chance to chat about things with the wrist shot in the Sahara Desert. He got a chance to dive into the precision of these stoneworks with like this recent technology showing the light scanners. And so I hope to see him on there again for like a solo 3 hour thing. I think that would be awesome.
Well, so you guys are both talking at the summit thing, the Cosmic Summit.
Yeah. Oh, this, okay. Real quick, let me plug that because here I was going to plug that Cosmic Summit in Nashville in June. And like the two times that we were on there.
Oh, you were
going to
plug it on Rogan, you mean?
Yeah. And it never even got brought up. I didn't. Oh, yeah. And there was two times I thought about saying it Rogan was talking, Ben was talking the two different times. I'm like, all right, as soon as I get a chance to speak again, I'll bring it up. But then the conversation switched paces. And then there was this other moment where he's talking about, oh, you should be speaking at universities. And then that should have been the moment to like say it. And then like, I just don't know how to describe it other than like, holy crap, how the hell did that not say it in that moment? When I'm rewatching, I'm like, Jimmy, say it, Jimmy, what are you doing? But anyway, so to anyone listening, there is an event, a conference in Asheville, North Carolina, June 17th through 18th. It's held at the the Crown Plaza Hotel, excuse me, in Asheville. And there will be about 10 speakers there. It'll be Randall Carlson, Graham Hancock, myself, Ben of Uncharted X, as well as a whole number of scientists. And people go to CosmicSummit2023.com and you get tickets to be live there in person and come rub shoulders with us. I'll be there. I'll be socializing. I'm really looking forward to that because, oh, and let me also say, I think it's not cheap. I mean, George Howard, he has a website called the Cosmic Tusk. He is part of the Cosmic Research Group, and he's creating the whole event. And so, you know, this is no cheap thing to rent out a hotel and cater it to more than 600 people for multiple meals over 2 days. So it's like he has all kinds of overhead. So the tickets aren't cheap, but, you know, it is what it is. But to anyone else, for $50 through HowTube, you can go on there and watch it live during the event or rewatch it later. But you'll be there. Absolutely. And so we'll be mingling together and meeting some interesting people. So this is one thing to people that I'm like, it's a rare chance to come rub shoulders with other like-minded people. Like I had went on a couple tours. I first went to Egypt in November and December of 2020. And one of the coolest things about that was that there was 33 of us or so that were touring from like 8 or 9 different countries around the world at this unique period of time where people were still doing these lockdowns and other things. And every single one of us shared something in common, which is like our shared interests of the ancients. And it was the vibe. There's a special vibe about that. Like in your day-to-day life, like most of my friends and family have no interest in these topics. Like people have known my whole life. Like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, Jimmy's into this stuff, but they're into their own thing. You know, I have friends that are into sports and other things. And then it's you don't realize it when you walk down the street that like sometimes you pass people and you have no idea that they're into these same topics. So it's a chance to get into the same room with so many other people, and it's just going to be a fun time, and I'm looking forward to meeting other interesting people there, and it'll be a good time.
I think so too. I'm looking forward to it as well. Yeah, I mean, like the tours I've done, if nothing else, you make friends for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, what do you think? Like, what do you think is going on at the moon, dude? Like, I know you've made some videos about it, like the mining on the moon. Like, I don't know. The moon is actually a thing that I'm like, damn, I don't know what's going on there. Like,
Let me give you a big prediction right now. So today is January 29th, 2023. Mm-hmm. Some people say, question, like, did we ever go to the moon or not? And what I say is the question isn't, did we go? The question is, when were we last there? My big prediction, and I have no evidence to support this at all, so this is just fun talk.
Okay.
But I think humans have been back. I wouldn't be surprised if there's someone up there right now. And even if they're not, there's drones. Like 5-6 years ago, China sent a drone to the so-called dark side of the moon.
Right.
And there's been very little released about that. And I'm like, when you have like these unlimited resources within the US government and other countries, like we haven't gone back there to explore, whether it's drones or humans or otherwise, there's outstanding questions involving the moon that are unanswered. And to me, I'm like, everyone's talking about going to Mars, 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 Mars. I'm like,
yeah,
I have questions about the freaking moon. Like there's underground, I want to say the word tunnels,
lava tubes
and other, lava tubes. And I'm like, and they're like, oh yeah, the openings are hundreds of feet apart and they go miles and miles. I'm like, I made this joke on one of my videos. I'm like, freaking go there, get a freaking GoPro with a rope and throw it on down there with a light and show me what the hell this shit looks like. You know, I'm like, there's so many interesting things about it. And it's like, I'm like, so I just don't believe if you have unlimited resources and smart people involved, I find it hard to, if I was running the show, we'd be back there. And so I know there's other people running the show that probably feel the same way. And I think things are done in secret. And I think that the moon, maybe whether it's because of precious various resources and metals and other things that will help facilitate technological, you know, just different there's money to be made there. It's like it's this cosmic jackpot.
It's like supposedly it's like the last time we officially went back to the moon. But first of all, only 12 people ever set foot on it from 1969 to 1972. So it's been it's almost 51 years since we've been back to the moon. Like that,
or which officially. Is suspicious.
And this, and I don't know, but I'm one of those who's kind of like, maybe we never went then, because like then we would have, you know, like why haven't we gone back? You know, like I don't know. I'm not 100% convinced anyway. That's why I'm always just like, the moon is definitely a big mystery for me. I feel watched by the moon. I will tell you that. Like I love the moon. Weird. I love it. You know,
I like it. Yeah, like I look at it. You know, like there's something so special about it. I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah,
like,
I love it.
We should credit it for our lives, because like when it comes to seasons and the tides and other things that bring great abundance here on Earth, whether even insects' ability to operate at night and other animals, you know, based on the moonlight, other things, like it's, we really owe it. We owe it something. And it just, to answer your question, like just the nature of its geometry, its distance from the sun, its distance from the Earth and its size. It's just I look at it as evidence. Not everyone will agree with me on this. This is just my thoughts, but I do look at it as evidence of an intelligent design, whether that be a great creator, whether it be aliens that were, you know, that were created and went on to create that. Like, it's beyond my level of understanding or knowledge, but there's something that we should all be grateful for it. So whether it's the biggest coincidence ever, I don't know. I recommend people look into the work of Randall Carlson. That's one of the rabbit holes he sent me down a number of years ago, was talking about the sacred geometry involving the moon and the cosmos and the math behind it. It's like that.
Yeah, it's just like the probabilities that it would actually align exactly with the sun to be able to create a solar eclipse like the way it does.
Yeah, down to 99.9, whatever it is.
Yeah, you're kind of going accuracy, like, that's where crazy. I'm with you. Like, I don't know, but created by who or what, but it's created in a way that
it is. Now, there's two ways of looking at that, though. Like, devil's advocate, they'll say, well, hold on a second. There's like trillions of stars. So one of them would have worked out this way by sheer odds. I'm like, okay, I won't disagree with that. But I'm like, at the same time, here I am talking about it. I'm like,
yeah,
I'm like, you know, maybe it is, maybe it's just a coincidence, but I'm like, yeah, I think it's part of something special. And, I don't know. And as far as us going there, like there is satellite, like, all right, so they have satellites orbiting the moon, taking pictures of it. And like, you can see the tracks from the Apollo missions and stuff. I'm like, you could see, you know, where they had went around on their rover. So I'm like, in my mind, we've been there. I feel like someone's been there. Like, but if that's not true, if we haven't, and that's like an elaborate hoax, oh my God, then we are really living in some bubble, because it's like, oh, what an egregious lie to continue. It's
but
not
I mean,
to say
it's
something's
the same
weren't doctored.
Antarctica, really. I mean, just the, I mean, people go to Antarctica, like the, not, I mean, you want to go colonize Mars, but you, there's a continent on our own planet that like Mars is supposed to have temperature swings beyond anything we could ever imagine. Like, it's way colder than Antarctica ever got. And like way hotter than, you know, whatever the Sahara Desert ever got. So you want to colonize a place, but there's our own planet, which we could there's places in the ocean we've never even been. There's so much stuff that we haven't even set up and really done a good job of really colonizing our own continent, or Antarctica. And then the moon. Yeah, the moon is just like a super there and back thing. It's not like, oh, it's going to be a 2-year journey. So
we can do it in 4 days, 4-day trip. Well, each way. But I will say this real quick. You're talking about like exploring and looking under the ocean. So talking about the Rishat structure. So off the west coast of the Sahara Desert, I'm sure people watching this that saw my video that you helped me find that under that seafloor slide that's like 200 miles wide, 130, maybe 150 miles from north to south. It is a couple miles under the ocean, but it has more than 2,000 meters of layered sediment. And I'm like, so there are people that are taking an interest in this. Since the episode with Rogan, there are people asking like, hey, what would it take to go explore this? Like, could we drill it? Because that's what I'm like, all right, so if the Rishat was Atlantis, they would have to be gold. If there was ever a spot to go looking for the remnants, it would have to be, I would say, that would be the most likely spot to go looking. And if there's an abundance of gold, we have technological equipment that can look for that. And there are companies that are actively doing seafloor, you know, excavations and seafloor ocean gold mining. And then you have other people that are treasure hunters, like finding sunken pirate ships. And I'm like, if you combine these unique fields together, I would like to see some exploration of that. There, off the coast, you know, the bottom of the Azores, you know, possible sunken island there and other places. I'm like, there needs to be a movement of people looking to explore the oceans. Like, this is like the real frontier of uncharted
Yeah, and you would
territory.
think,
And I'm like,
because the ocean drones have just gotten better, you know, and like, now you don't even have to like put a human down there to
no, just throw it in there for like months on end.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like when they were searching for Malaysian Flight 360, you know, they have these drones that can operate for weeks on end. And yeah, so I'd like to be part of, I've been talking to some interesting people recently, and they are looking, and so some people want to go over there with a boat, send some, if nothing else, just some like drones down there to take some pictures of what the seafloor looks at, you know, just down there over that seafloor slide. This is an exciting time to be alive, because there are people, there's a lot of money out there. There's people that have it but they're not spending it. And some people are looking to be like, you know what, if I threw a little bit of cash at this, is it possible to find something? Cause like, it's at that adventurous feeling of like the unknown and exploring. And I'm like, this is one thing I tell to anyone, like they might not believe in Atlantis or the Rishot theory and all that, but I'm like, that's great. Because if nothing else, we stand to learn something scientifically, whether it's this unexplainable water erosion that covers the Sahara Desert, or whether it's just possibly finding something interesting, you know, at the bottom of the ocean. It doesn't hurt to go looking, and in the process, we'll learn something scientifically that might have nothing to do with lost ancient civilizations. But if nothing else, it's a win-win. And what I'm trying to be
climate,
an advocate,
like thing that people aren't talking about is like, what's the desalination? Like, why are deserts deserts? Like, what's like, how come they don't get rain over those areas? And then you can do that whole like greening of the desert sort of situation with like, if there's enough, you know, if you plant enough vegetation, like kind of it ends up coming. Like, I went to India for a month and I worked on this place called the Sadhana Forest, and it was like a reforestation project. And it was like this disgusting, like desolate land. And then this like Israeli couple went there and in the course of like 15 years, planted like thousands and thousands of trees and then turned it into like a forest that grows on its own. Like, we would plant like the little saplings in these, in berms and stuff, where you would basically plant them on like dead logs and stuff so that there was food for the first 3 years of its life. But you tried to get them planted in a way to where they didn't need human interaction. Like,
right. After, didn't need to be watered by us.
Yeah, like they
did,
they could be watered by their own source, and you could create like these little ravines and stuff. And then by the time it's a mature enough tree, it has enough going that they're like microclimates form. And that's the sort of thing that I'm going, desalination if there is salt all over the Sahara, we know, like, I mean,
a lot of it,
how long does that ruin soil? Like, how long does that ruin dirt? Like, you know, there was a talk about the Sahara spreading further south, and like they're planting a big like row of trees to try to like, you know, kind of keep it from moving further south. But we really do need to do a lot more study on just like how you actually like what these deserts mean,
right,
how long they can last, like blah 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 blah, like in addition to everything else. I'm just saying, like, that's there's a lot that we need to study. That's not just
nothing. That salt is significant for multiple reasons. If people want to say that the last time the Sahara was under the ocean was 50 60 or 100 million years ago, and that's how they're going to explain that salt, I'm sorry, but when you also have, there's evidence that contradicts that. The fact that we know that the Sahara Desert was green 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, and according to MIT, they're saying that, oh, this might happen in cycles of every 20,000 years where it goes from green to desert, it has to do with Earth's tilt. I'm like, okay, so you're going to say that that was all green, but I'm supposed to believe that that layer of salt just existed, because as we know, salt prevents most things from growing. And I'm like, that salt would have been moved out of the way, blown out of the way, dissolved, or not necessarily dissolved, because salt doesn't necessarily do that, but like it, you know, it would just get carried away and mingled about. And like, it just seems to me that, I mean, the evidence is there for all who have eyes to see. And there's enough evidence that when you tie and connect all the dots together, it shows that things had transpired here on Earth far more recently than what we had thought. And the implications of that when it comes to climate science and other things, which are hot topics right now. Like, I would like to know some answers on that before I go ahead and mail that check for some carbon tax. Like, I'd like, just some answers about the Sahara Desert before I mail that one out, right? I feel like these are details that are so significant. And the funnest part about it is I'm like, no one's talking about this stuff. Like the Sahara Desert seems to be just this lost ancient jackpot of information that hasn't been found yet. It's inhospitable. It's very difficult to travel there. The areas are so vast. It's unreal just how big that the northern part of the African continent is. And so it's an exciting time to be alive because there are answers there that, and this is one reason why I'm an advocate for people asking questions and researching these, because these kids that are coming out of school now, it's kind of like they're being taught that like, you know, most mysteries have been solved now. So just continue to memorize this. There's not a whole lot to go looking for. And I want to be like, no, like there's so many things that are left to be discovered, and people need to be aware of that. So well, the mystery is real.
I always tell my nieces and nephews, I'm like, hey, school is just a bullshit babysitting thing. Okay. Like what's really happening here is they teach you how to read and write. That's good. But it's on your own yourself to like go research. Like education doesn't stop at 12th grade or whatever grade you go to or whatever. Like knowledge is a lifelong pursuit, and you have to constantly be educating yourself, because you can't rely on anybody else to educate you. You have to educate yourself on like what it is you want to know. And and like I think just if we really start looking at that in terms of like learning is something that is forever, that we would be way better off. But I like, what did I actually learn at school? I don't know. Not that much. I don't know. I learned a lot of social stuff maybe, but.
I would argue that's the most important thing about school is just learning how to. I know some smart people. There are very smart people out there. They can't get jobs because they have terrible human interaction skill sets. I would argue that more than anything in life, if you can't get along and interact socially with people, you will be held back greatly. And so if nothing else in school, learning how to just use your brain and learn how to also socialize with people, those are the two most important things. What I can tell you is that me learning algebra did nothing for me, literally nothing. Yeah. No thanks. And it was hell to sit through those things. So I believe that in school, like they need to be allowing people to pursue their true passions. This whole world would correct itself if people were following their passions, not necessarily what they thought was going to bring them the most money and success. Cause that's the path I almost went down when I went to go back to school, get that MBA. I was like, oh, this will get me the six-figure management position at some, you know, some top 50 corporation, Fortune 50, and then like, you know, life will be good. And it's like, that wasn't going to bring me happiness. I hope that what's actually really bleak, that the education system is really effed. It's oh my God, that's a whole other topic to go down. Yeah. But this is the point. The message though is that people have the power to pursue their own passions and purpose in life, and there'll be nothing that will bring you more fulfillment than chasing whatever that is. And we all have a calling, and I think that if everyone follows that calling, the world will balance itself out. Right now things are not balanced because they're operating on things that aren't true, such as like how to live a happy life. Like if you do these check boxes, you will be happy. Like I was literally one of those people, and I was more unhappy than I'd ever been because of that. And then it wasn't until tying back into what I said earlier, it's like, it's not until I went my own way and just kind of hit my own bottom of like depression and just not satisfied in life, that then I the only way to go was up. And then that was done by just following things that actually made me happy. I'm like, I like reading about ancient cataclysms and the Egyptians, and like that was bringing me happiness. And then just following that brought good things to me. So I'm like, this is what people need to do, is like, if you're not happy, and this, I would say this to other people too, like the biggest critics in this little realm, people who are like mainstream archaeologists or get mad at, you know, people coming up with alternative theories. Part of me wants to ask some of these people, it's like, do you enjoy this? Like, is this your calling? Like, do you really enjoy this? Because I'm like, it seems like it's making you angry most of the time. And so, you know, if things are making you angry, it might not be for you. I don't know. But then again, I guess the devil's
response to that would be like, I think we're talking about kind of a select like Twitter mob that I don't know if all archaeologists are like that. I also feel, but okay, to that point though, I do feel like just because you uncover something doesn't mean you are the only person there for all eternity and morum that can have an opinion about it. You know, it's right. Like we, data is to be collected from every which way, and then people can interpret that data differently. And that's just kind of like the nature of the world, and that's like okay. And you don't have to.
Yeah. One thing that I was going to say, this ties back into school, because you were saying, what did I learn in school? And then when I got my undergrad and I was at my graduation ceremony, I don't know what his name was. I don't know who he was. I don't remember anything else that was said except for one thing, and it stuck with me.
What, at the graduation speech?
Yeah. He said, because he was saying, like, you know, here's the quote. I am a student and I am a teacher of everyone I meet. So all these people out there that might think that they are the experts in something, it's like, well, hold on a second. You can learn at least one thing from someone else. Even the people that are your biggest naysayers or presenting alternative theories that contradict most of your own, it's like, well, hang on a second. You can at least learn one thing from them. I am a student and I am a teacher of everyone I meet. That's something people should embrace.
I love it. Yeah. Even if it's just a trigger, like, then you got to look into your own self, you know?
I learned how dumb this person is.
That angered me. It's like, why did that anger me? Like, that's something not resolved within myself if that angered me. Very cool. Well, thank you, Jimmy. This has been fun, dude. Like, is there
total
anything
pleasure.
That
we should
I
totally
didn't
do this
talk?
Again.
Is there anything that, like, you know, I didn't say that you would like to talk about?
I don't know, but I'm sure once we get off, I'll think of a few things. So I think that we should do this again. Let's do this here in a few months. There'll be all kinds of new things to chat about. And I, you know, to anyone listening, because I'm sure you'll have some new people finding you that come over from my channel that aren't aware. It's like, I want to give you the props again. Like, you gave me several line items of evidence that helped bring together, because I was sitting on that Roman map for a long time. I'm like, this is fascinating. It's one thing for people to have dismissed the map from Herodotus. But this one, I was like, this is fascinating. We're literally talking about something that was created by the Romans' earliest geographer. And I was like, this is fascinating in itself. And there was other few details in there. But then when you provided me with these other things and you went hunting and digging for this info, I'm like, this is people, you know, hey, people should hire you. Like, people that are researching some topic, they would be wise to hit up Nikki Anna Jones and have you do a deep dive. Cause you did, you sent me like an email that was lengthy. And I guess, well, I'll backburn some of that stuff. But I was going to say, when it has to do with comparing the Rishat versus other sites and stuff like that, like, you had some very, very interesting counter arguments as well that were fascinating. And
by the way,
yeah,
I've had some new insights on Rishat recently, but I'll tell you about that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Stop recording. Don't tell anybody.
Okay. Yeah. No. Okay. Cool, Jimmy. Well, we will do this again soon. And
you bet.
Yeah. Thank you so much, dude.
It's a great pleasure. Thanks for having me on. Wonderful conversation. And I look forward to next time.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Ha, ha, ha.